Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time and have a lovely talk about them. Today's episode, I have a very special bonus episode for you, chatting all about a film that premiered at Frightfest Glasgow earlier this month in the UK. My name is Andy Conduit Turner, and today I am joined by two very special guests, Alex Austin and Kia Sewart, directors of the toxic relationship breakup buddy horror, Kill Your Lover. How are you both? Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Amazing. And I mean, before we get into it, let me give anyone who hasn't got the background here a little bit about the film. So Dakota has had enough of her toxic relationship with Axel, but the feeling isn't mutual. As she tries to end things, Axel becomes something different, something monstrous. Gradually succumbing to the poison of the decaying relationship, becomes a creature increasingly aggressive, a touch that melts skin, and worse of all, he's contagious. So thank you, Ben, very much for the synopsis and get everything together. We were there. We got to see it live. Congratulations on the movie as well, both, by the way. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it was really great to see it with an audience and get such a great like vocal response to like all the moments that we could have hoped for. So yeah, it was just great seeing it with, you know, the whole sold out 300 people. It was just a fantastic experience.
It's a nice venue as well, isn't it?
Because, you know, I'm half Scottish. You know, I grew up partially in Scotland, even though I don't sound it. So kind of like it felt like being able to have its UK premiere in Scotland felt especially special.
Yeah, it was really special.
Wonderful. So, I mean, before we get onto the film itself and where we got there, let's go back a little bit, shall we? Tell me a little bit about your horror history as fans, as filmmakers, of all the genres you could have found yourself in. How did you end up here?
Well, our funny sort of path into things is that when we first started making films together, we were actually making a lot more comedies. And it was sort of like more sketch stuff, 48-hour film projects. Like that was basically my film school, whereas Kira actually went to film school. And yeah, but I think that really helped us like with timing. And then it was only actually more like, 2018, so 6 years ago now, that we did our first actual proper horror.
Well, I think I'm like very old school in the sense that like, you know, I grew up watching like a lot of like B movies, you know, with my dad. So, you know, especially like watching like old, like William Castle movies, you know, things like, you know, House on Haunted Hill. And then also, you know, I was really into like Robert Wise's The Haunting. And, you know, like I watched like a lot of old, like black and white movies, a lot of like black and white sci-fi and horror. And then kind of like, as I got into I got very scared easily. So it was like those black and white movies were kind of the things that I was able to watch. And then I remember around my teens was when I finally, you know, sort of managed to like sit through like actual like horror movies. And the ones that really like got me was, you know, I was obsessed with the VHS cover for John Carpenter's The Thing, which I have like tattooed on my arm.
And you're on camera, show them.
And but
right there.
Yeah, you see, these are the benefits if you join us on the video feed of this as well.
Bonus if you're watching the video. But yeah, and then just like I've just really gravitated towards like body horror, like, you know, The Fly, you know, just like everything, anything like gooey and fucked up and, you know, sort of like, you know, but I think I always
have a weird obsession with black goo in particular. Yeah. Like one, it's very strange. I'm not quite sure what that means. I'm figuring it. I'm working it out. But, one day I'll know the answer.
Well, and I think that's why too, we kind of ended up really gravitating towards, you know, like body horror. And so like we made a short film called Wretch, which was kind of like, which did like the rounds and like went to a lot of horror festivals and ended up getting, going up on Altar. And then that kind of was like the thing that kicked everything into gear for us, because it's how we ended up as part of an anthology feature, you know,
called Isolation, which came out it was at Frightfest 2021 actually.
And then yeah, basically we just haven't looked back since then. We're just committed to horror. I think that was the thing. I think we had such a healthy respect for horror that I feel like it took us a while to feel confident enough to actually try and make horror films, because it's so, I think there's people always talk about how it's like, it's a very forgiving genre in a lot of ways. People are like far more willing to be like forgiving in terms of production limitations and money. But I still think like you have to take seriously like the craft of horror.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
I think in that sense, you were in awe of horror. Yeah. Like you wanted to be respectful of it, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
So comedy, easy. This is horror. That was the thing we really had to build up to.
Yeah, you say that though in the comedy, and I think you can, hearing you both describe that now, you can kind of see where your comedic backgrounds come in as well. Because I mean, this is a horror film. There are elements of body horror to it, but you hit some very nice sort of comedic beats dialogue-wise in terms of just some of the looks and exchanges that we get in there as well. I think you already nailed it when you were discussing there. The timing that is so important in a successful piece of comedy, while the rhythms might be slightly different in a horror film, it's still so, so important to hit those beats at exactly the right time to have your audience on the ride with you and have them work out the things at the time you want them to work them out and anticipate and then react at the right times as well. So it must be incredibly important. Did you find that helped you when you were making the film, that background?
Yeah, all of I will stress that all the comedies we made were extremely dark in nature. So the shadows have always been there. The inner demons were just waiting to come out, I guess. But yeah, no, I definitely think that helped. And I think with Kill Your Lover in particular, like, you know, it's not like what I call funny haha. It's not like point and laugh. It's more life is absurd. Love is absurd. Some of the stuff we do is very strange and sort of like, I think we got very specific with things on purpose because we thought that would resonate with people more rather than, I don't know, having generic, general characters. But like, as far as the comedy was concerned, I think, you know, we do love a setup punchline and also lots of visual comedy, actually. The lamp, the recurring lamp story, I think just really entertained people a lot.
I think we were very like inspired by South Korean cinema, and South Korean cinema has these really kind of like intense like tonal shifts. So you're watching like something like Old Boy and you're going from really like intense, like, you know, scenes of like, you know, a guy getting his like teeth like pulled out by a hammer, but then you'll have these kind of almost incredibly broad like slapstick moments that'll like come as part of that. And I always just found Park Chan-wook's kind of like thing about it. He's like, you know, sometimes the things you're doing are so absurd, you have to kind of like acknowledge that in some kind of a way. And I think, especially with this project, I think part of it was to say, you know, we're telling an absurd story here. So at a certain point, people are going to realize the internal logic of the characters, everything is that they're going to acknowledge how absurd what's going on is. And you can't, you kind of have to steer into that sometimes, you know. Yeah. And I think that was kind of like, it's the comedy more comes from the commitment to the moment and the commitment to the bit rather than just simply undermining or kind of like making fun of what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that line is very tricky, but it's something that, you know, we've got quite used to, and I think it's something that interests us, and I think we'll continue to sort of excavate as we go, yeah. as we make the movies.
And I feel like when you navigate this, that balance very well, that slight break in the tension, you know, like a moment of levity or a moment that you can just, as you say, laugh at the absurdity of the situation and just, that it's a nice break that actually endears you more to the characters, makes you care more about what's happening to them. So yeah, really well put together from that sense of me. But as you know, when you started making this film, how did you begin talking about it? What was the seed that the idea germinated from?
The original idea literally came from the fact that we were like, we ostensibly just wanted to make a feature, you know, and we were trying to figure out how can we make a feature for very little money and very little resources. And so the idea initially came from this whole idea of we talked about how difficult it would be to actually kill one zombie if you got trapped in your flat with a zombie.
Especially if it was me versus you and you turned into a zombie. Like, he is 6'2" and I'm like 5'8". So it's like, you know, how difficult would that actually be? Because it's always shown as quite, you know, in some movies, it's like, okay, well, I just whacked him over the head with a spade and now he's dead, you know.
Well, I think it's like, even if you think about, like, because I've had this where there's been like a spider in the bath and you try and kill it and it just won't die and you can't but, you know, think about like that if like you had a human being that's turned into a zombie that wants to eat you and how difficult that would be. And we were kind of like, okay, we could make a movie that's just about somebody trying to kill one zombie. And then you start going through the logic of it where you go like, well, it's more interesting if there's some kind of emotional connection to this zombie. So maybe there can be a transfer, some sort of transfer or some kind of point where the person's turning into a zombie. So you get more dramatic potential out of it. And then the problem was once the character becomes a zombie, then you're kind of like, well, you feel like you're losing a lot of dramatic potential because then the person's just a monster.
And they can't talk.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're very drawn to say like, because like most of what we've made is essentially monster movies of some sort of form. Mm. But I think, you know, what's really engaging to us is say like the universal monsters where like they're characters that have some kind of internal, you know, sort of the feelings and, you know, there's a kind of more interesting, like rich sort of like character stuff to go with it.
Yeah.
So kind of like, so that kind of how we then found the zombie element was kind of limiting. And then we kind of were like, well, we can just kind of make up our own rules. Like, why do we need to make it a zombie?
Well, and coming into the universal monster side of things, like we were rewatching a lot of them earlier in the year, I think 2 years ago, and Frankenstein in particular is like a big one for us. And I think one of the things that started developing is, I think because of where the idea originally came from, we were like, well, obviously we're on, you know, the lead female side. And then as we started developing the film as well, we were like, I think it's a lot more interesting. And me in particular, I remember pushing for, I think it's much more interesting if Axel also has his points, not to say that either of them is particularly right or particularly wrong, but there's a lot more nuance to be had from that. And like, I think we very much started leaning into the idea that, you know, even though they become monstrous, like neither one of the characters is the monster. For us, it was the relationship that become the monster, basically.
Yeah, that was a big takeaway from me sitting in that audience there. I think you obviously put a lot of care into the dialogue and the relationship for that exact reason you described. While there is, I think primarily as the film goes, you begin, you have an antagonist and you have your lead character that, you know, is in opposition to them. But what I really took away from it was that not everyone is entirely bad. Not everyone is entirely good. There are faults in there and there are things that you can think about from those people. And I think you really drew it out with the dialogue, particularly around the state of their relationship and how they were unpicking those ones. Where did you draw that inspiration from? How did you go about developing those kind of discussions? A lot of daytime talk shows and watching people's relationship fall apart?
Oh, probably far more personal than people would like to know, or maybe like more in the sense that like we pulled from our own relationship, of course, as well, but we also drew from friends' relationships. And so I wouldn't want to like necessarily go into
we like to joke that I'm more like Dakota, you're more like Axel, and then
in the broadest strokes
yeah. of it. But
I
like,
mean, I think it's like that the main course, like I think it's kind of Dakota's so innately creative whereas Axel is more steadfast and a little bit more responsible in many ways.
I was just more going for I'm a fucking mess and you're the
I see. Well, I'll take it then. There's sort of this clash of two people who could potentially be together, but it's more they are looking at the other person and seeing the sort of romanticized idea of their life and how they could maybe become more like that person. So Axel wants to be more in Dakota's world, and Dakota's like, oh, well, maybe if I'm with him, then my life will come together a little bit more.
Well, I think we were very inspired by this notion of a couple that we knew where the person, the female was more of an artist, and she had been through, had led a fairly wild 20s. And she was suddenly at this point where she's like, I need to find a stable person. And she ended up being with this person who was the very opposite. You know, he was a very like stable sort of guy, but he was like, oh, this person's an artist. I really aspire to be more of an artist. And we kind of always felt like the two of them were kind of in love with the concept of each other rather than the person. It's what the person represented more than the person was themselves. And so that was always our starting point with Axel and Dakota, with this idea that they're in love with the concept of what the other person is and what the other person could represent to them more than they're in love with the actual personality and, you know, person that they're with.
Yeah, and like actually trying to grow together instead of trying to like force this other idea. Yeah. Out of it, like they just don't listen to each other enough, I think. And then it's like dialing that up to 11. But when it comes to like the dialogue itself, like that was very much drawn from very like specific moments that we'd come across or people have told us about. Some of it's us, but some of the cute moments are us as well. So it's like, you know, one of the things I will admit to, and people who have seen the movie will understand which moment this is, but there's the bit where Dakota says she needs to go to work, and then she's sort of last minute slaps Axel on the bum before running away, and he can't quite catch her, and it's like a playful moment, and he's like, why are you always slapping my ass? And then she says, because it's so fucking cute. And that's directly drawn from our relationship, because I'm definitely guilty of doing that. You don't hate it.
You have to be ready to chase quicker. Speaking of the film and in real life as well, another bonus for those of you on video, I can see one of your pieces of set, a piece of the lighting behind you right now as well. I now need to ask, was that part of your home decor originally, or is that a bit of set dressing that you decided, I've got a place for this? Is this your lamp, Alex? Is this your beloved lamp?
No, this is very much a yes, we'll have that after the shoot, I think. Yeah. So definitely nabbed to that.
It's actually kind of like, it's really good for watching movies because you basically black everything out and then you put that on and you have like this kind of like slight pink sort of like light, which kind of creates like a really sort of good sort of like glow for the TV screen, but doesn't put you in total darkness. So it's like, yeah, it's our kind of movie watching light.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest as well, for our podcast, it's good horror hangout theme lighting as well. I might have to see if we've got Patreon money for this kind of setup for a studio at some point.
Just go LED, not neon, and save yourself some money.
There we go. So, I mean, we've talked about the development of the film itself and the story. It would be remiss of me not to talk about some of the body horror and the gore, and of course, Keir, the black goo. How did you go about making that? I know for an independent film, budget's always a concern, but, you know, no spoilers here as well. I think there were some lovely body horror and lovely gory moments that would have not been out of place at the end of a round of Mortal Kombat for some of them as well.
I was about to mention that because that's not the first time we've heard that.
So first off, you know, definitely want to credit. So Rebecca Wheeler, who did the makeup, she had worked on another short film that we made called Do Not Resuscitate, where Alex actually plays the monster in that. And it's actually kind of almost like a dry run because it's about two paramedics who show up at a call to find a dead body. And it turns out the dead body is not as dead as it initially seems. So, and it also has black goo in it. but yeah, so kind of like we had a really good working relationship on that. And so we kind of got in touch with her very early on.
Yeah.
And we kind of had
especially because of the black veins. Like the black veins were the main thing that we wanted to really get in. And for the SFX nerds out there, Rebecca ended up making her own sort of Bondo, basically to allow for the budget to work as well, rather than, you know, getting it shipped in. So she worked really hard on that, and I think the effects, the end result was really great. I mean, she ended up winning best effects at Brooklyn Horror Film Festival, actually. So very proud moment.
It was definitely it was a stressful process too, because it was like at least a couple of hours in the chair for like Shane, and so we also like pretty much before each day we had to know kind of like how much of him was in shot, what needed to be done where.
Yeah.
So it's like certain days like it was only his front that would be covered. But then like there were days where we had to get two actors made up, and we needed so Rebecca then had like two assistants also working on it for 3 hours to try and get it all together. So it was a big stressful process, to say the least. But kind of like, yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those things where you really want to show up and make sure that you've actually like stick the landing on all of these things. And then not only that, but Black Veins, but also like there's several kills.
Don't spoil it.
I'm not spoiling anything. Okay. Just
check.
But it's like, but there's like, you know, several kills in the film that are very elaborate. And so we had to storyboard those very carefully and kind of like really, so kind of like we knew what was on show at any given point and like what we were bringing towards. Cause like one of the worst things that you can see and you learn a lot when you watch like effects movies is where people don't shoot the effects properly, because really you need to like really sell things through the angles in the best possible way.
I would say, you know, getting good balance of like not overlighting as well, which can be really like difficult, because sometimes you're like, oh, I spent so much money on this thing, now I want to like show it off, but then it doesn't work.
It's the atmosphere, right? I guess if it's overlit,
it's also because you can end up showing the fringes of things too much otherwise. But I think this is where like doing the short films that we did, both Wretch and the short film that we did, Sucker, which was also at Fright Fest, which is about a giant leech creature, which I have in my cupboard, which terrifies all of our guests. We really love practical effects as well. So I think what was really helpful from those shorts was almost having like a dry run to see how much we really needed to show and how much we could do with sound as well. Because sound is huge for us. And I think a lot of the time, effects can actually be more effective if you show a little bit less and do a little bit more with sound. So I think Sucker in particular was like a really good one in terms of getting the balance right and figuring out, you know, how we wanted to apply that to the feature. So that's how we saved some money as well.
Yeah. It's good to have that light touch as well sometimes, isn't it? Because as you say, especially you can sometimes expose your limitations by going too far and showing too much. And for my money, certainly, no spoilers for anyone, but I think there are some really effective body horror and gore scenes in there. So I mean, let's talk about the reactions. I've given you mine, but what's the feedback been from audiences so far?
It's been interesting, because we certainly, each festival brings its own kind of like different vibe to it as well. So it's like Brooklyn really, really like honed in on the comedy. So it was the opening night film at its world premiere, which was Brooklyn Horror. And just like everybody was like really like laughing. It was like very like, it was a very big experience. And then it was really funny, because we did a private industry screening in LA, and you could have heard a pin drop through the entire thing. Cause we were kind of going like, cause there'd been a review afterwards that was like, Kill Your Lover, your new favorite black comedy. And we were like, oh, I guess we're a black comedy. We didn't realize it. But then like we went to this industry screening, nobody laughed. And then we were like talking to people after, they were like, oh my God, it was so funny. And I was like, but you didn't laugh at all. And they were like, oh yeah, well, I just didn't know if I was supposed to.
But I think it was like that they felt like the intensity, I think, more from that perspective. And the sound was particularly awesome in that sort of smaller industry screening space as well. So everyone was getting really swept up in the music, I think, as well. That was a big feedback point from Brooklyn as well, as people were like, when can I buy the album? And the answer is soon.
Well, I think so. Obviously, Fright Fest, it was a really it was a really interesting one because we didn't really get a chance to talk to people much afterwards because it was such a late night screen. Everyone kind of like left
We didn't get the Q&A afterwards.
We didn't get the Q&A afterwards. So we didn't kind of like quite get like the same ability to sort of like quite see like the same like reactions and stuff like that we have at other festivals. But certainly it really felt like people laughed at the points they were supposed to. I heard at least one person make an audible noise during one of the kills. So that was good. The guy in front of me walked out after 15 minutes. I don't know if he was sleepy or just it was too much for him. But I think we've been really pleased with how like audiences have reacted to it.
I mean, one thing that I'm definitely very grateful for is I heard from someone who's attended Fright Fest before is that the 11 p.m. can be like, you know, later on in the day, and then some pass holders don't come, but we still had a full house. So clearly people were into it. So happy about that.
Yeah, I think it was well attended. Like you say, a shame that you were, I mean, for everyone else listening, context-wise, Kill Your Lover was the last film of the first full day, so the Friday night, right? So, yeah sadly, because people have homes to go to and there are, you know, cinema staff particularly have homes to go to, we weren't able to stay for a Q&A afterwards, which was a shame, because I think it would have been nice for you to hear a little bit more from the audiences, but I've heard positive things as well. And I guess as well, the other thing when you look at an agenda like this is where else you've sat in the running order, like what's come before and after you. I know from the second day, so you were free of this one, but the second day of the event myself, there were a couple of fairly heavy going, you know, really serious, and there's absolutely a place for those. They're really powerful movies, but I think some levity after those can really, so you also might see where you sit in the running order of things as well, not just the time of day, but what's come before and how people are holding up mentally by that time as well. And for me, obviously we'd had some other lighter films during the day as well, but after a start of that first day that had been really heavy in some psychological dramas, a lot of foreign language films, you know, shame on me, if I could speak French, I wouldn't need to read the subtitles. It was nice to finish that first day looking at a couple of films back to back that had a bit of levity to them, definitely still brought the horror elements as well. So for me, this was a really, really great midnight movie to finish off the first day. It was a lot of fun.
And like, I think it's fair to say that we tend to bring a shot of adrenaline into any program. So I'm glad that seems to still be the case for our feature. This is our debut feature. So, you know, carrying on that trend from our short films that's great. That's great feedback.
I mean, I think ultimately too, I mean, I think the thing that, you know, you do want is you kind of want your film to make some kind of impression. So it's like, you know, just being a sort of like generic middle of the road film, you don't kind of like, you kind of don't want it to be boring. Like, you know, if you're going to like, you're going to make a debut feature, you kind of almost want to attract people who like really get it. They really vibe with it. Or, you know, you probably want at least a few people to hate it as well. You know, just get like, you know, it gets some kind of reaction.
We're always going to go bigger and bolder, I think, rather than the reverse. So yeah.
You're absolutely right. It's really preferable to draw an opinion, positive or negative. They're talking about these things, and from my perspective, positive. I won't ask you to throw other films under the bus and talk about things that you don't like, but for me, some of the biggest challenges of things being released mainstream outside genre events, when I look at some of the things that are getting cinema releases from bigger studios now, that's my exact problem, that I feel people take less risks. They want a safe option. And to the point, critique on a film we did recently on the main feed was that almost the beats feel algorithmically generated, and the creative team been told you should hit X, Y, and Z because this is the recipe. So it is really refreshing. And that was a feature of my entire Fright Fest. Like, it's so great as a genre fan to see films that are doing something different, pushing the medium, doing what you can with the resources you have available to us. And I think it makes for more memorable films.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, if I may, I'm not going to mention specific, but Kieran, I've been talking about this a lot actually, is this idea of the horror aesthetic that's being applied to some films now. Like, they're coding things horror, but they're not really like following through on that. So it's like you'll have like what's basically a comedy.
Yeah.
But they're like putting horror aesthetic onto it. Like, no, I've enjoyed quite a bit of American Horror Story, for instance, but I feel like that kind of aesthetic has been taken and like eroded from film to film. It's like a copy of a copy, if you know what I mean.
It's yeah. like what we tend to refer to it as the kind of American Horror Story kind of vibe, which is where something kind of just takes it takes the notion or the aesthetic of a horror, you know, like recognizable horror stuff, but doesn't actually really try to actually horrify or unsettle or create tension. It's kind of there more as like a pastiche or almost camp, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we all love camp horror, but it's like, but I do think that there's a kind of element to which horror is somewhat getting lost sometimes, is just purely kind of decorative.
Well, or also, aesthetic. Also, I think, you know, there are certain studios that are trying to follow what A24 have been doing so well. And like A24 are really uplifting a lot of really like interesting voices, and the studios just don't seem to be able to get their head around it.
Yeah, it's that authorship as well. I think having, you can definitely tell, you know, you haven't got to be a film scientist, I'm not one, to know when something has been decided by a creative team. This was a decision that a writer made, this was a decision a director made or a director of photography made, versus this is a decision an executive made that wants to know about what their ROI is on this film. Like, you can definitely see those directions and when they are, and when those choices are made, because you're creating a product and not a piece of art. And that's something that I've been a little fatigued by some films recently, but nothing that I saw at the festival, including Kill Your Lover. So good news, everybody. There's still great stuff on the way. So, you know, we've talked about the past, we've talked about the present. Naturally, as Charles Dickens and A Christmas Carol would have us go, we need to talk about the future. What's next for all of you? Are you sticking with features? Are you dabbling back into shorts and anthologies? Where are your eyes next?
I think it's very fair to say that features are the way. We've got several scripts written, but one in particular is a werewolf movie called Alpha Freak that we're chomping at the bit at, which has been doing, is progressing very well, shall we say. But to stay on Kill Your Lover for a second, we're very excited that the film's going to Overlook Film Festival in New Orleans next. I'll be attending, so if anyone's there, come say hi. And then we're also going to the amazing Hardline Film Festival, which is in Germany, which is just really, really fun. So that's the near future for Kill Your Lover anyway. And then the good thing is that we've got distribution on it as well. If you want to chat about that.
I think we're going to be distributed in the UK. Sorry, not the UK. Sorry. We're going to be distributed in the US through Dark Sky. So should be coming out sometime this year. It's not been sort of like confirmed or anything yet. We're still looking for UK distribution at the moment, so hopefully we'll come out at some point. You know, we will probably be hitting up some more UK festivals over the next year, so there will be other opportunities for people in this country to check it out.
Hopefully some Halloween shenanigans. That'd be fun.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So obviously when all of these things happen, I do take a piece of homework away from every single festival we attend. Ben will, bless him, put the show note in the show notes, the festivals he just mentioned. So if you are in New Orleans, if you are in Germany, you'll have those dates and the availability where you can perhaps catch the team live and see Kill Your Lover there. As we get other pieces of news on the distribution, the dates, be it cinema, streaming, wherever else in between, we will share those in our news sections of the show. We will share them. You know, the good thing is about social media is platforms may come and go, but those share buttons never wear out. So as the team share them, we will make sure we spread the word all we can. If people, you know, don't want to rely on my diligence as a third party, though, where can they follow you directly?
So because our names are almost impossible to spell correctly, especially yours here. We basically operate under the label, the production company, Switchblade Cinema. So that seems to be something that people can spell quite easily. So that's Instagram. You can find us there, or our website is also switchblade-cinema.com, where you can actually check out some of our shorts as well for free if you want. Get all that monster goodness. Yeah, that's the easiest. And then through that, you can, you know, find us as well, obviously, our individual profiles. But yeah, that's probably the best way. We also have a Kill Your Lover Instagram page, if that's useful. It's KYL_movie, because Instagram does not like the word kill. It's very sad.
Yeah, we've talked about things that are bumming us out recently. That's similar as well. You're not allowed to say any of the good words on there anymore.
Otherwise, you get de-algorithmed. Never eradicate us.
Well, I mean, you know, we make our film is an 18 plus. You know, we get all of the sort of the content warning. So, you know, it makes sense that we would have an Instagram page that we have to censor ourselves.
Mm.
Yeah, Unalive Your Lover, coming soon to all sanitized platforms.
That would be the alternative title.
Oh, I get it. Is Lover Unalive problematic?
Your intimate friend.
Sorry, yeah. What was that?
Yeah, Kira already nailed it. Unalive Your Intimate Friend. Maybe Lover's too edgy these days as well. Well, wonderful, wonderful stuff. I mean, I would not be able to let you go without a couple of generic horror fan, not generic, horror hangout specific horror hang questions for you here. So let's talk about some recommendations. I mean, your cinema goers, your festival goers, when you survive in a long session at a film festival, several films back to back, what is your snack of choice, or do you just have to stack heavy on breakfast and then marathon it out?
I mean, I really like Grenade protein bars. They're really sort of like, they've got like a really nice variety of different flavors. The Oreo one is particularly the one I like. And then just Diet Coke and a lot of coffee. Those are my
Pink Lucozade.
Actually, yeah, I do really like Pink Lucozade. Yeah, that's one. The zero sugar pink lemonade one. I really
That's what I mean.
And that's one of the flavors that you're allowed, right? You're only allowed that dark orange one when you're sick in bed. Everything else then, is fine.
Exactly.
No, it was always Iron Brew when I was sick in bed.
Oh, the dream. How about you, Alex?
So I would definitely have to say a Flamin' Hot Cheeto for me, or Doritos Heat Wave, because it's just got that like really nice tang. It wakes you up as well. I think you're just like, okay, I'm ready for the next movie.
Need a bit of spice. And also, like, you know, smart choices, sugar, you're risking a sugar crash in that, you know, that midnight slot. So yeah, you got to get your savories in there too. Okay, the hardest, most high pressure question of all now. Obviously, we do a show called Horror Hangout here. The pressure's now going to be on the two of you. So you got people coming over. We're going to have a movie night. They say, you two make films, you're horror people. You're choosing what you're going to put on for a hangout movie with a, let's call it not a genre crowd, it's a mixed crowd. What are you going to put on as a big crowd pleaser as you're getting a group of people over?
He already knows what my answer is going to be, so you better not steal it.
No, you go with your answer first, so then I don't steal it.
Ready or not, hands down, boom. Because horror, but comedy, but mostly comedy, but dark and funny and relatable and just, well, Samara Weaving.
Yeah.
Need I say more?
We do have a lot of movie nights. Have we done did we do Ready or Not? We showed my mom Ready or Not.
Yes.
Yeah.
She had to see it.
Yeah. I think.
I've seen it so many times. I'm trying to remember all the times I've seen it. What's your movie?
Josie and the Pussycats. it's horrifying in many ways. It's horrifying to look at and realize that it's the 90s personified in every sort of like capacity. And
I think that one's so entertaining, and the music is everything's a bop. I think it's also like seeing different people's reactions. Josie and the Pussycats is hilarious. So we had like, you know, she wouldn't mind me saying this, she's one of my best friends, but we had her over for a movie night and we were like, we're going to put this on. And she is effectively the oldest 25-year-old you've ever met in your life. So she had a great time watching the movie, but she was also incredibly baffled.
It's wonderful. Like, I love the experience of confusing people with a movie night. I will say, so if I'm gonna be serious for a second and do an actual like horror movie, I think one of the ones that's really funny to like show people and just get like a reaction is Life Force, because
wow,
that movie is just so baffling. But it's also great because so much of it is meetings. Everyone can kind of talk while that's going on. Like, there's so much room to actually have conversation while the movie is happening. And then suddenly you'll have like crazy person's soul being sucked out of them by a topless vampire lady from space. And then by the end of it, you just look at it and you go, God bless the mountains of cocaine that allowed this movie to happen. You know, so yeah, I mean, Josie and the Pussycats was my fun answer, but Life Force would be my serious answer. Well,
why not a double bill?
Double bill, Josie and the Pussycats.
What a double bill. So this is what our listeners can expect. Should you find yourself invited to a movie marathon round at this couple's house, then this is what you can look forward to. Alex Gear, thank you so much for spending a little time with us. I know that we were sort of ships in the night at the event, so yes. Really nice to catch up properly.
Thank you very much for making the time.
I know. I'm so glad we managed to get around to it. And I'm, you know, hopefully this will be an opportunity for other people to hear about where they can see Kill Your Liver, look out for it in the future as well. I'd certainly recommend you watch it, everybody. So yeah, watch out for more news and we'll get onto it very soon. For everyone else for right now, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, you can become a patron over at patreon.com/horrorhangout. Thanks to our old mate, Taj Easton, for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. All the other stuff, if you listen to us anywhere, whatever platform it's on, if it supports ratings, chuck one on there. It helps with algorithms and the like. Also, you can join us all over the socials. You can find us at the Facebook group, the Horror Hangout Board of Advisors, suggest films. We have a Discord. We have a TikTok. We have an Instagram. Type in Horror Hangout Podcast. You'll find it. In the meantime, though, thank you, Alex. Thank you, Keir. Goodbye for now, everybody.
Thank you so much. Bye. Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.